The combined talents of all the deviants aboard did a splendid job of making the Larkspur look like a standard fleet cruiser once more. And they'd been polite enough not to comment on the amount of cell they were missing due to Deaton's outburst. Despite the resources' depletion, the remaining cellium wrapped around the ship made Deaton's skin itch, and not only because it was a fortune's worth of the material. If he were to lose his temper again, he'd take half of Petrostat with him. Laiella marched ahead of Deaton and Tibbs across the roof toward the grand double doors of the watchtower. The Larkspur loomed behind them, its presence oppressive. Tibbs gave Deaton a gentle nudge in the shoulder. Right, Tibbs was here. He'd never let Deaton lose control like that. It was their deal, the cornerstone of their relationship. They balanced one another with jokes and barbs, skirted around the short-leashed tempers in both their hearts.
We're going to save a damsel in distress from a tower, just like in fairy tales.
Don't let Pelcoya hear you say that. She'll pop your eyes out and throw them in a stew.
Oh, have a little fun. Has it occurred to you that we're breaking a woman out of jail just to break a woman out of jail?
Thought had crossed my mind.
Once this is through, I don't want to see another set of bars for a year. Not so much as a sharpening rod.
Rather thought you were enjoying yourself.
Shut up, Tibbs.
As you say, sirrah.
A few long strides ahead of them, Laiella paused and sized them up with a wary eye.
Hurry up, louts. We have two prisoners to take custody of. Prisoners that you idiots let go.
She spun on her heel, the long Commodore's coat flying out behind her like a standard of arms, and strode toward the unsuspecting lobby of the watchtower. Deaton suppressed a whistle of appreciation. Essie had been right, picking Laiella for this job. The girl had her upper crust act down pat. Probably because she'd grown up as one, just as Deaton had. The Watcher's dock was a two-tier affair, and as they ambled along, Deaton peered down to get a better look at their neighbors. Only one of the Watcher ships was currently manned, a short-bodied barge with three large buoyancy sacks netted above it. The craft was packed with a handful of Watchers. At least three, Deaton realized with a start, were sensitives. They appeared to be doing maintenance on the ship, holding cell in place while workers patched the buoyancy sacks. Their presence made him nervous. If they were strong enough to sense the cell hiding the Larkspur's shape, this whole plan might come apart at the seams. One of the watchtower doors lurched open, the tall pane of lantern light from within casting Laiella in silhouette.
It is the middle of the sun's cursed night.
The sturdy man strode out to meet Laiella, his back near as straight as hers, despite the gray in his beard.
Can you not wait until morning, Commodore? This hour my staff is thin enough. We cannot spare the destruction.
Laiella paused, letting the watch captain close the remaining distance between them. A power move, that. Deaton couldn't help but wonder how far the girl had advanced in her courtly etiquette training before Pelcoya had whisked her away to the safety of the sky. Deaton and Tibbs stood at ease, flanking Laiella, a half-step behind her on either side. Their hands laid over the grips of cutlasses neither of them knew how to use. The blades had been loaners from Pelkaya's costume trunk, just like Laiella's coat.
I've come to relieve your staff of some of their burden.
If it's prisoners you're after, come back in the morning. They'll keep in their cells until the light.
Do you not see the storm approaching? A half mark ago, the sky was filled with the strangest lightning I've ever seen. Monsoon season comes. I'll have my prisoners back now so that I can see them securely to the remnant.
Deaton flinched as the watch captain eyed the blackened sky warily. One of the watchers who had taken Pelcoya away in the goat cart appeared over the watch captain's shoulder, a sheaf of papers tucked under one arm and a sour expression on his drooping, exhausted face. Before the watch captain could give an answer, Deaton pointed at the young watcher.
There! That's the man who took our prisoners!
The watcher's head jerked up as he looked for his accuser. Upon sighting Tibbs and Deaton, his shoulders heaved.
You!
Laiella approached the man, shouldering the watch captain aside. Deaton followed, giving the captain an apologetic pat on the shoulder as he passed.
You are the man who commandeered fleet prisoners from my men?
They were our prisoners, Commodore.
Really?
Laiella stopped an arm's length away from the poor man and jabbed a finger into his chest.
Was that before or after? after they shot a fleetman in the leg with an arrow.
Crossbow.
Even worse.
They may have shot a fleety.
A what?
A fleetman. But they did it in Petrostadt. Means they're ours.
He's right.
The watch captain crossed the roof and stood beside his watcher.
Those two did their crime on Petrostadt soil. They're ours.
Do you think the fleet cares about your petty soil? We guard the skies, Captain, and everything below them. I will take those prisoners now. Bring me to them.
All right, Commodore. You can have your shooter, but I'm keeping the other one.
I think not. The other is an accomplice. They are both guilty of violations against the very sky we of the fleet patrol. I'll have them both, or I'll have you both.
Two lousy thieves are not worth all this bickering. I assume you two are capable of overseeing the transport?
Aye, sir.
Good. Follow me.
The captain waved the other watcher back to his business and led their motley party across the lobby. He paused at a large desk, a horseshoe of a thing taking up half the room, and rifled through a stack of folders until he found the one he wanted. He blotted a pen and poised it above a sheet of paper.
Your name, please, Commodore?
Lyella Eredin.
Deaton blanched. Her real name. Unless the family name was faked, but he had no reason to doubt that the imperious girl was a member of the Mercer Eredin family. His stomach churned in panic as the captain's hoary brows rose. Throwing out a heavily Valathian name like that would work in any backwater town like Crackthorn. But here? In the largest port on the southern coast?
I see. And your ship?
The Mira.
Never heard of it.
I do not see how your ignorance is my problem. Hurry up! I do not wish to lose the wind.
To Deaton's immense relief, the captain shrugged, scribbled in his notes, and left the folder open on the counter to dry. Spinning a ring of keys around his finger, he bade them follow him down a wide corridor, growing narrower with every step. The labeled doors of watcher offices gave way to blank wooden planks, and then, after a short jaunt up a flight of steps, row upon row of heavily iron-banded doors. Lanterns hung between each door, but still the hall felt dark, oppressive. Midway down the hall, a guard sat astride a tall stool, his coat unbuttoned and crumpled at a sloppy angle.
Hadar!
The captain sped his stride.
Wake up, you oaf! We have fleet visitors!
He grabbed the man's skewed lapels, and the guard's head lolled to the side. A trickle of blood rolled down from the corner of his lips.
Pits below!
He pressed his fingers against the guard's neck to check his pulse.
Is he all right?
I don't know. Go call for a cursed apothec.
They hesitated, not wanting to break up their group without a plan in place.
How should I know where to get an apothec? I've never been in your tower before.
You go, watch captain.
Lyella stepped forward and slipped her hand beneath the injured guard's neck to support his head.
I'll look after the man. We take too long finding our own way.
Uh-huh.
The captain eased the guard's weight into Lyella's hold. For a man easily twice Deaton's age, he certainly hustled as he ran down the hall the way they'd come. When he disappeared down the steps, Deaton rushed over to the guard and claimed his key ring.
If Pelkaya started the party without me, I swear to the pits!
What do you mean?
Whose handiwork do you think that is?
Oh.
Which one?
30 left for Pelkaya, then 2 down again for Kors.
How in the clear skies do you know that?
Gotta look at the release forms.
We've been doing this for a while. You get used to it. You learn where to look.
Deaton strode off toward the first cell Tibbs indicated. He jammed the skeleton key in its slot and twisted. Empty.
Fuck. Pits, damn it.
He hustled down to Koss's supposed cell. Empty.
Thrice cursed woman.
Hurry up now.
Deaton glanced his way. Tibbs was busy pulling Lyella away from the injured man.
He'll be fine. Help's on the way. And Pelkaya will be making her way back to the ship. We gotta beat her back there before...
What in the pits are you doing?
The watch captain stormed down the hall. Two apothecs trailed him, the women's white aprons threatening to bring up some mighty uncomfortable memories. Deaton abandoned his plans and strode toward the captain.
You idiot watchers! The prisoners have escaped!
What?
The captain stopped mid-stride, aghast.
The cells are bloody empty!
The captain recovered his composure with admirable speed and pointed at the apothec who had gasped.
You! Go ring the alarm!
Yes, sir.
She whirled and sprinted down the stairs while her compatriot advanced upon the injured guard. Deaton turned to make eye contact with Tibbs, hoping the wiry old bastard would have something in mind. Tibbs raised his brows at him in question. Koss threw Pelkaya a stink eye through the shadow of the alcove in which they hid, pressed up hard against the cold stone.
"Will you please take that stupid face off?"
Pelkaya grinned, twisting up the borrowed visage of the watcher who had arrested them.
"What? Don't you want to kiss me like this?"
"Stop it. We're trying to be quiet. Although it is good to see you laugh again."
Pelkaya brushed him off, setting aside the temporary intimacy. She needed to focus, find her core of control. It wouldn't be long until the guard she'd tricked into releasing her by wearing his colleague's face was discovered, and their empty cells shortly after that. Curse Petristad for building everything so tall. If they were in any other station house, in any other scorched city, they could have climbed out of a window by now. Or at the very least, discovered the blasted front door.
"Which way?"
Pelkaya tore off down the western arm of the hall.
"Slow down. Running will just draw attention. The ship will be there when we get back."
"Don't count on it. The longer we leave Deaton without supervision, the more likely we are to discover everything's gone to the pits while we were away. That man..."
Pelkaya paused, peering left and right down the forked hallway. More wood paneling, more doors marked with numbers. No staircase. Except there was a little well of darkness to the left where the lantern light could not quite penetrate all the way to the floor. Promising.
"The very fact he went off script at the vault indicates he's up to something."
"It was my fault the guardsman grew suspicious of us. You can't blame him for that. And, well, I didn't mean to start a fight, but that was..."
"Hurry, we must reach the ship before Deaton does."
"You don't really think he could win the mirror away from the crew in your absence? Jeffin wouldn't let him so much as touch the deck."
"I pray you're right. Though I find myself wishing you had thrown him off that jetty and cracked Thorn."
They reached the spot of darkness and found a spiral set of hard stone stairs descending into the black. Dust coated the steps, and unlit lanterns hung from iron hooks. This was access for cleaning staff or goods transport, not the warm, rug-run flight of stairs Pelkaya and Koss had been escorted up. Pelkaya doubled back to snatch a lit lantern from the hallway and plunged down the first flight of steps. It was colder in the stairwell. They must be close to the edge of the building now, away from the insulated and fire-warmed interior.
"Run!"
How they discovered their absence so quickly, Pelkaya could not figure out. The watcher who'd slammed the door on them had told her they'd missed the dinner hour and handed each of them a crumpled roll and a jug of stale water to last until the morning meal. She'd thought they'd have time, maybe even all night, to find their way out of this maze of a tower. Pelkaya's foot hit a floor landing, and the door beside her swung open. A maid, clutching a basket of laundry to her belly, dropped her burden.
"Mally! Are you all right?"
Mally opened her mouth to scream again, but Pelkaya grabbed the woman's arm and yanked her onto the stair landing. Pelkaya whirled her around and grabbed her tight.
"Don't scream."
Koss raced forward to shut the door halfway so that they could not be seen from the hall behind it.
"Call to your friend. Tell her you're well, and no harm will befall you."
Pelkaya jabbed two knuckles into her back above her kidney. She had no weapon, but the maid didn't know that.
"I'm fine. Saw a rat."
Koss peered around the door, then dragged the laundry onto the stairs landing and shut the door the rest of the way.
"Speak softly and tell us the way out of this nightmarish place."
You must go down to the third level, miss. That's the closest. Then down the hall all the way. There'll be a door. It opens up to a walkway that crosses to the washer's house. Can you let me go now, please? I won't tell anyone, I swear it."
"Sorry, Mally. You're coming with us as far as the washer's house. If you don't make a peep, you'll be fine. Understand?"
"Uh-huh."
Dragging Mally along with them slowed them. Down one level. Two. Three. Splitting her concentration between holding the psyllium against her face, escorting the maid, and being mindful of her steps was taking its toll on Pelkaya.
"I'll take her."
Koss reached out to gather the maid in his thicker arm.
"No!"
The maid's gaze fell upon Pelkaya's hands and saw that she held no weapon.
"Help!"
Mally hiked her skirts and bolted swiftly down the steps.
"By the pits!"
The maid was already a few flights below them.
"Oh, forget her.
Tokaya grabbed Koss's arm.
We can't be far, and we must be quick.
Here!
Koss grabbed her arm as she jerked to a halt. Not bothering to explain, he lunged for the next door and flung it open. Tokaya caught only a brief glimpse of the number 3 carved into the old wood and dragged her through. The hallway was narrow. A single door stood at the end of it, painted a sunny yellow. Koss flung the door open, and they barreled through. The walkway was narrow but sturdy. It led to a dark building, to a twin yellow door. As they started crossing over, Pelkaya glanced down at the 3-story drop to the road below. She stumbled slightly, but Koss grabbed her. As he steadied her, Pelkaya looked back, glancing at the sky instinctively.
How did...
Pel, what is it?
He followed her eyeline, saw the familiar, if obscured, shape of their ship docked against the watchtower.
What the...
That's what I get, working with Honding. He's here. That daft-headed man came for us. Come on, let's go get ourselves arrested again.
Pelkaya rearranged her mask to the one she had worn when they had been arrested. Through all their fleeing, she had lost a few bits of the mask. It lay thin and patchy against her skin. Fine for fooling an overworked watcher, but no good for close scrutiny.
Koss, I hate to ask, but...
I see the problem. Give me a moment.
Steadying himself with the handrail, he stared straight at a piece of empty air between them. Her skin tingled as he accessed his cell sense, focused on the very rawest edge of his sensitivity. While he could see the minute particles of cell drifting in the air at all times, he could also, when matters were desperate, reach out and wrench some of those bits and pieces together, force them to gel into something large enough for another, less well-tuned sensitive to use. A little pearl shimmered between them and began to rise. Pelkaya snapped out her senses and captured the new glob of cell, adding it to the thin parts of her mask.
How is it?
Fine. Hold on. I need a few minutes to catch my breath.
Me too.
The watch captain proved fleeter on his feet than Deaton had imagined. Lyella and Tibbs pulled ahead to nip at the watch captain's heels. As they hurried, the captain pulled out a whistle that was on a thin cord around his neck.
Is that really necessary?
They've been spotted in the service desk.
Of course, that's the way they'd gone. Deaton had insisted as much before the captain had gone tearing off down the main stairwell. The captain wrenched a door open, and they jumbled out after him, zigzagging through the maze of corridors that made up the watchtower. They reached a darkened alcove, and the captain paused to wrench a lantern from the wall. While they waited for him to light the wick, Deaton grabbed Tibbs' arm and pulled him close.
New plan. Talk over Lyella if you have to. Blasted girl is too honest.
You have a plan?
I will by the time we find him.
Tibbs cracked a grin and pulled away, tearing off after the hustling captain.
Shit.
Deaton forced himself to hurry along, counting on the others to do any finding that needed to be done. The bells were still ringing in the service stairs, but with longer intervals in between, allowing the watchers space to better communicate.
Help! Help!
A maid crashed into the captain while fleeing up the steps. He steadied them both.
Are you all right, miss? Have you seen the escapees?
Third floor.
She pointed back up to the level they'd just passed.
Going for the laundry building.
Are you injured?
Deaton was already scurrying ahead. Having fallen behind the others, he was first back up to the third floor. He found the door unlatched and hurried through, closing it enough to give the captain pause. The hall beyond the door was empty, save for a half-opened yellow door at the opposite end. Lyella flung the door behind him wide and barged in after him. Deaton jogged to the yellow door and tugged it all the way open. Pelkaya stood directly before him, her stranger's face on.
Stand down!
My face!
Koss fell to the floor. Pelkaya dropped to her knees to steady her first mate, and Deaton peered over her shoulder, surprised to find the man's face was smeared with blood.
What's happening here?
Deaton glanced over his shoulder in time to see the blue-coated bastard shove his way past Lyella and Tibbs. Deaton had the good sense to shake his hand out as if he dealt Koss a mighty blow and was aching from it.
Found him, Captain. Have your lads wrap him up so we can get off this cursed rock before the storm sets in.
Good work.
The captain clapped Deaton on the shoulder as he shoved him aside to get to Pelkaya and Koss.
One of the apothecs can get you a salve for that hand.
Soon the hall was deep with bluecoats. Deaton feigned an ache in his hand and slithered to the back of the hall, keeping an eye on things while Pelkaya and Koss were trussed up good and tight. Deaton's head jerked up and he tried to spot Tibbs in the crowd. Tibbs had gotten himself in with the prisoner escort and had a hand squarely on the ropes wrapped around Pelkaya's wrists. Trying to make it look casual, Deaton waited for Lyella to pass him by and fell in step beside her, joining the little blue procession back up the watchtower and hopefully to the deck of the Larkspur.
I thank you for your assistance, Captain.
Assistance? That wasn't for you, Commodore. Those two bastards knocked one of my men clear out. You know how bad that could be for a mind. He was out for a while, too. If he suffers any permanent damage...
I will personally see to it that they work hard labor on the Remnant.
Remnant? I think not. They assaulted a Watcher. They will serve their time under a Watcher roof, penned in by Watcher walls.
Are you mad? They shot a Fleetman. They are mine to do with as I please, and I will take them to the cold care of the Remnant.
Begging your pardon, Commodore, but you have no jurisdiction.
Pardon me, Watch Captain, but we can hardly trust you to keep anything under a Watcher roof. These two failed thieves were under your care scarcely more than a mark, and already they'd run off halfway to the laundry hut. You're incapable of containing them, unless, of course, you want them running free to wreak...
How dare you! This is the most secure facility in all of Petrostad.
Really? How quaint. Then I suppose we cannot leave them here if this is the best you've to offer.
The captain punched him. Deaton exaggerated a sideways stumble, just managing to catch himself on the stairwell banister. The sea of watchers stilled.
I apologize. Fleetman,
Lyella stepped close to the captain.
I will forgive this trespass against the fleet if you relinquish the prisoners to my control.
They are yours.
Lyella turned sharply on her heel and strode up the stone steps like she owned them. The stunned watchers shifted aside to let her pass, then reluctantly fell into step once more, herding their prisoners back up toward the roof. Deaton was chagrined to spot a wide, delighted smile on Pelkaya's borrowed face, but he figured a little pain was easier to deal with than convincing that captain to give up his charges willingly. Wasn't the first time he'd riled a man into punching him, and it wouldn't be the last. While Lyella and the captain filled out the necessary transfer paperwork, all forged on Lyella's end, of course, Deaton slunk over to Tibbs, Pelkaya, and Koss. He didn't dare say a word, but it felt good to have the people he'd come to filch close by. And it had the added benefit of hiding him from view of the cursed apothec roaming around the roof, checking the watchers for injury.
If that will be all.
Yes, of course. Gag him up for transport.
That's not necessary.
Too late. The watcher wrapped a clean white linen gag around Pelkaya's mouth and tugged it tight against her cheeks. Her flesh shimmered in the telltale hues only Cell could produce.
Capo!
Run!
Deaton grabbed Pelkaya's arm, saw Tibbs do likewise for Koss, and they all ran like hell toward the lobby.
Make way!
Sure enough, a few watchers in the lobby stepped clear of his path on instinct. Then the rest of the watchers closed in upon the fleeing five, a wall of blue cutting off their exit.
Hello.
Deaton waved his fingertips at the watcher who stood before him. He took a nervous step backward, and his back bumped into Pelkaya. They'd been corralled into a sour little knot in the center of the room.
Now, I'm sure we can talk this through. There's no need to send a perfectly good cell sensitive to their death, now is there? She'll be no menace to society, all locked away on the Remnant as a proper prisoner of the fleet.
The fleet?
The watch captain spearheaded his way through the nervous cluster.
You really expect me to believe your son's cursed fleeties after that? Run! I heard you clear as the skies are blue.
I think you'll find the skies are quite black at the moment.
To the pits with the color of the sky! You and your gaggle of... who are you people?
I believe we have already been introduced.
Are you challenging my Commodore?
Will you be silent?
You are in no position to give orders to my men. I apologize that this one overreacted. Many would do the same in the face of such a creature.
Commodore Eridan of the Mirror, is it? We'll see. You'll have to wait until we can get word back from Valathea confirming your identities. Men, show the fleeties to their new rooms on the top level and secure that ship of theirs. Throw the Doppel and her associate in a new cell until we can arrange an execution.
This is unconscionable. You will not make me get caught in the monsoon.
Miss, if this is a misunderstanding, then I apologize. But we've gone beyond your schedule.
The watchers step toward their huddled group, reaching for batons and shackles alike.
Finally.
Deaton flinched, ducking down as the front of the storm slammed into the gathered watchers. He sensed the source of that wind. Wasn't wind at all. A wave of psyllium washed over him, around him. An unseen sensitive shifted the gas back to its natural hue. Glimmering and flashing, the psyllium displaced the air around them, fogged their eyes. Whoever controlled the cell that covered them had pulled back and switched from an all-consuming front of fog to a whip-like storm. Lashes of brilliance tore through the air, separating the watchers from their prisoners, stirring up real wind and scattering the light. The watchtower's oil lamps blinked out one by one, leaving only the gleam of cell, beautiful in its endless anger. Deaton reached out a hand, entranced by the shattered and coalescing rainbows flowing around him. Tibbs yanked Deaton's wrists, and he stumbled, remembering he needed to run. Deaton staggered out the door after Tibbs, broke through the storm of cell onto the strangely peaceful dock bathed in plain moonlight. The Larkspur reared before him. On her smooth deck, Jeffin stood, surrounded by a half dozen other sensitives Deaton didn't know, sweat sheening all their faces. Every last drop of the psyllium used to disguise the Larkspur's iconic beauty had been stripped away, manhandled by her small crew to disorient Pelkaya's captors. Deaton looked back, seeing watchers spilling onto the dock in pursuit of Pelkaya, Koss, and Lyella. He sprinted toward the Larkspur's gangplank, dragging a startled Tibbs along behind him. They scrambled up together and fell side by side in a heap of silky smooth ropes piled up against a cabin wall. Lying on his back, Deaton watched Pelkaya stride up the gangplank after him, her first mate and young, brave Lyella trotting at her heels.
Bring it in!
She spun around to heave up the gangplank with her own hands. The ship jerked, slewing away from the dock by the unseen force of someone, no doubt Pelkaya, shoving on the psyllium hidden away in the ship's buoyancy sacks, clustering it to one side of the ship. A sloppy turn, but a decent enough fix to lurch them out of the reach of watcher hands. Tibbs hauled himself to his feet and offered a hand to Deaton.
Get up, Sarah. Work to be done.
The ship's got a full crew.
A little busy right now.
Deaton took Tibbs' hand and allowed himself to be hauled to his feet. The sensitives were arrayed against the Larkspur's aft tail, hauling in the clouds of psyllium they'd used to frighten the watchers. Great snakes of it flowed out from the watchtower roof, trailing up the ship like the tail of a shooting star. They were straining, all of them, and even Pelkaya had gone to join them, and not a single hand was left to see to the ship's tiller. Deaton forced himself over to the captain's podium, working the cranks that angled the sails and set the gearboxes on the ship's great propellers spinning.
Good old-fashioned flying.
Not for long.
Tibbs jerked his chin to starboard. Deaton leaned from his heightened perch at the captain's podium, peering down at the dock they'd abandoned. The watchers piled onto the craft he'd spotted earlier, encouraged by the sweet prize of the Larkspur, and were lifting off below.
Tie on!
Tibbs reached for his anchor rope, even as he latched one onto Deaton's belt. Deaton threw his back into the crank of the Larkspur's largest aft propeller, throttling them out and into the clouds, and toward the dark smudge of a storm appearing upon the horizon. The watchers followed, chasing the starfall trail of psyllium Pelkaya's crew struggled to reel back in. Deaton eyed a suspiciously small wheel to the lower right of the primary wheel, dyed a bright cherry red, and wondered what would happen if he gave it a twist.
Best not!
Tibbs had stationed himself at the navigator's podium, a smaller version of the captain's.
How in the black did you—
How couldn't I?
Deaton snapped his attention back to the task at hand, doing his level best to ignore that tempting little wheel. Couldn't see much of the horizon from the captain's podium, not with clouds sealing them in. But Tibbs was fitted up with periscopes and signal flags. Of course, the crew who was supposed to speak with the navigator in semaphore were currently occupied recovering a fortune's worth of cell, so really he just had his periscopes. Deaton popped out one of the chalk pegs set into the podium that were designed to brace the handles of the primary wheel.
Mark course!
course.
You find me some stars, I'll find you a course.
A cottony blanket of gray clouds scraped the sky above their sails, blotting out all hope of navigation. The soft glow of Petrostad's lights smeared the horizon to their aft, and nothing but empty blackness yawned to their fore. Below, all around, the black silk of the sea stretched. Endless, and without the stroke of the moon's light to give its sheen away, too easy by far to confuse with the horizon. Out over the open water, in the middle of the night, with a storm coalescing all around them, horizon blindness could settle in quickly.
We're fucked!
The thought had occurred to me.
Climbing!
Deaton reached down to crank the wheel that controlled the tilt of the lift propellers. He set it spinning, letting the masterful gear ratios do the heavy lifting for him while they were ascending, one hand on the wings wheel to keep them as close to level as possible. A narrow liquid level had been set into the top of the captain's podium, the air bubble within gleaming up at him as he stared it down, keeping the thing right smack in the middle of the central lines. He couldn't let the Larkspur yaw to one side or the other. Any subtle variation could set them on a course to the waves.
Mark weather!
Fucking soup!
Deaton kept on climbing as he stared down that bubble. If this ship had a barometer, he couldn't see it, and Tibbs wasn't calling out the pressure as he would have if he'd had access to the right instruments.
Tibbs!
Dinning!
Clear air washed over his back, brushing away the thick moisture of cloud cover as the Larkspur heaved itself atop a woolly blanket of gray cloud. He locked the lift wheel into place, and the ship jerked as it nosed down, almost stalling into an aft slide. Deaton glanced up, expecting to see clear sky, but instead, Belkaya filled his view.
Get off my podium.
You could captain this ship when you've got all the sail back. Mark course already!
Working on it!
This isn't your ship, Honding. Step aside and help the others.
By the pits, Belkaya, you think I'm enjoying this? You ever flown into a sea storm before?
The twitch at the corner of her eye was the only answer he needed.
I see you haven't. Well, I have, and I'll be damned if this is the right moment to teach you how to handle it. Thank your cursed stars I happen to be aboard, and go get your sail back. And don't come bitching to me if we lose those watches before you succeed. My goal is getting out of this alive and free. I don't care about your surplus.
A gust struck the ship, throwing the mainsail hard to one side.
Shit!
Deaton braced himself against the podium as he straightened the ship's sideways slew.
You want to help? Get those sails down and have everyone tie in! Things are gonna get rough!
Belkaya glared at him, but strode off anyway, her footsteps easy and comfortable over the bucking surface of the deck. Soon, dark silhouettes moved across the deck, away from the aft where the struggle over the sail continued, spindly figures swinging up on the masts to bring the great sails down. A black bolt skittered across the deck, nicking the heel of his fine new boots. Deaton jumped forward enough to slam his chest into the wheel. The ship began to slide, but he straightened it before the effect could be troublesome.
What in the black?
Company to starboard!
The Watcher's craft had caught up, pacing the Larkspur's rail. It was a low-bellied thing, narrow enough to cut through the sky just as quick as its propellers could force it along. Psyllium shimmered all around it, twisted into strange, knotted shapes, as the sensitives on board the Larkspur struggled to wrench it away from the three sensitives Deaton had seen fixing the craft when they first arrived. All along the deck, a string of watchers spread out like links in a chain, at least eight of the bastards, with blackened crossbows pointed straight at the Larkspur's deck. And there wasn't a sensitive aboard the Larkspur willing to answer those crossbows with the ship's harpoons so long as the cell remained in jeopardy.
You make a real nice target.
Another bolt skittered across the deck near Deaton's feet. One plunged into the wood of the podium.
Pits!
Deaton hunched down in the three walls of the podium, struggling to keep his body hidden while still being able to exert enough leverage to work the great wheels.
They've got a harpoon!
Hold on!
Deaton prayed to the clear skies that Belkaya had got his message across to everyone to tie themselves in. Huddled as he was, the wheel was a bear to turn. But turn it he did, heaving the wheel to port. The sleek ship responded immediately, tearing away from the Watcher's vessel so quickly that Deaton feared he'd roll them. He jerked the wheel straight and risked a glance over the top of the podium for the starboard side. The Watcher craft was a good couple of hundred strides away, and although Pelkaya's crew was scattered all across the deck, they appeared to be all there.
Woo!
Deaton popped up to his full height and angled the ship for a gentler curve to take them away from the Watcher craft. The shadow of the Watcher's craft turned, following tight behind. A damp Pelkaya marched toward Deaton, the rain making the cell on her face shimmer through her illusion. She thrust a finger toward the Watcher's craft. Cellium enveloped it, Pelkaya's surplice.
Blow it!
No.
No? No? Look at it! We've lost it! Blow the Watchers and we can reel in what's left.
Deaton squinted, shading his eyes to keep the rain clear. The amorphous blob of pearlescent gas twisted at the edges closest to the Larkspur, connected to the main blob around the Watcher craft by thready wisps. His little stunt had gotten them out of harpoon range, but it had been too sudden. Half the crew had lost their hold.
So you lost it. So what? I told you!
Sierra!
Deaton and Pelkaya whipped around to look Tibbs's way.
We've a problem!
A great column of cloud, gray and bulbous and churning, loomed on the horizon. Its body crackled with streaks of lightning. The patchy clouds that spilt rain upon them reached out toward that swollen pillar, twisted into smears as they were pulled in under the force of the storm's updraft.
What?
That's a cloud suck! A God's tower! That's death!
Captain, the Watchers are gaining again!
Deaton looked to the Watchers, standing between them and Petrostat, looked to the cloud suck, standing between him and Ripka, and made his choice.
Right, Pelkaya! Use what you've got left and block the Watcher's view of us. Throw up a mirror of the cloud suck right in their path if you can. We're going the long way around and we don't want them following. We'll have enough problems without him on our heels.
Just blow the curse!
Deaton slammed a chock plug in to brace the wheel and turned, grabbing the front of Pelkaya's shirt in one fist. He jerked her forward to stare eye to eye with him.
I said no!
Think you can intimidate me too? I'm not my crew, Haunding. I know the make of you. Now blow that sky's cursed ship!
Every last eye of the crew on the deck were glued to Deaton and their captain.
No innocence!
You think they are?
You think Ripka wasn't?
Pelkaya caught his meaning. Watchers were just doing their jobs, doing the best they could to keep their cities safe, never mind their masters.
We clear!
As these skies. Won't be any hiding the Larkspur after this.
Then I suggest you practice putting on Thratia's face.
Pelkaya stomped off, Koss trudging at her heels. Tibbs marked a course, and Deaton began to steer around the rising storm. As Deaton steered the bucking Larkspur through troubled winds, the Watcher's inferior craft dogged their heels.
Are they trying to get themselves killed?
Are we?
Deaton grimaced, gripped the wheel so hard his knuckles went white. The cloud suck towered on his left, the mighty edifice of wind and rain and lightning indifferent to his struggles. The wheel gave a shiver, and the nose of the ship jerked upward. The podium shuddered as a deckhand rolled into it. The wheel jerked from Deaton's hands and spun, slamming into a half-pulled chock peg. Wood cracked, split down the middle, shards scattered across the deck. Deaton grabbed for the wheel, but the ship swerved to port, dipping as the wheel forced the wings to bank. His heels kissed the sky as his ass became acquainted with the deck.
Fuck!
Scrambling, slipping, he hauled himself half upright and fumbled for the wheel. A gust rocked the ship, tossing him. He missed and grabbed the little cherry red wheel instead. Deaton's weight hauled down on it as he scrambled to his feet, not realizing what he held. The ship dropped, hard.
Close it off!
Damn it!
Deaton grabbed the main wheel and yanked it over, setting the Larkspur straight again. He got his wits together enough to realize what he'd done and cranked the cherry red wheel back until it wouldn't turn anymore. Too late to do much good. He'd purged one of the buoyancy sacks, and now the ship was sinking.
Jettison!
Crew scrambled. Barrels of water and coils of rope and sacks of cloth were heaved to the sea. The cabin doors were yanked open, every scrap of inessential materiel thrown to the yawning black. The ship settled into an unsteady neutral. Deaton shook so hard he had to set a fresh chock in the wheel to keep from vibrating them into a turn. That was too damn close. He rose to his toes and peered over the top of the podium. A wind-whipped deckhand staggered to his feet.
You all right?
All enough!
The deckhand tested the tie line hooked to his belt that held him to the ship.
Still secured!
Wonderful! Now don't touch my fucking podium again!
The deckhand cut an awkward, head-bobbing bow and scuttled back to whatever his position was.
That was good for the morale.
When being charming will wiggle us away from this storm, then I'll put the manners back on.
Deaton wound up the starboard propeller, hoping the extra propulsion would force them to turn despite the winds.
West 30 degrees!
Deaton heaved the propeller's gear wheel around. A gust rocked the starboard, swung up out of nowhere, and the ship slewed. Deaton glanced up on instinct. The Larkspur's ponderous turn kept it level, but the deck was scattered with crew who'd been knocked over by the gust, dragging themselves back to their feet. A few of the crew had latched themselves into the auxiliary cranks on the propellers, adding their muscle to his when the wheel he controlled signaled them to heave to. The cloud suck loomed off the prow. Great swaths of gray-black cloud were twisting around the cloud suck with an eye bigger than the whole of Petrostat. He couldn't see the top of it. It reached so high. The whole of the massive system bled out into a smear of steely gray. No stars peeked through those clouds.
We'll make it!
Already they'd banked far enough away from the great tower that the strength of the winds began to slip, to ebb. The wheel jerked less beneath his palms. The wings trembled only slightly. A gust of hail scattered across the deck, bouncing off the hardened wood and bewildered crew. A thumbnail-sized chunk of ice pinged off Deaton's head.
Should have brought a hat.
Shouldn't have let a wiry scab make off with my hat.
Ain't yours.
Fits me just fine.
If by fine you mean it looks clownish on that pinhead of yours, then sure.
You dust swallower.
Crew members who'd been attempting to recover the cloud of psyllium before they'd entered the storm crowded the larboard rail. Deaton made sure all the wheels were chocked before scurrying over to join the crew at the rail. His tie line trailed out behind him, growing taut as the captain wasn't meant to stray far from the podium when the skies were rough enough to require tying in. He made it to the rail, the rope tugging his belt behind him. Below, the watcher craft was in trouble. It shimmied and slewed in the winds, the tattered remains of its sail whipping in all directions as the winds gusted up and over. Watchers scurried to and fro across the deck, not guided by a practiced hand, everyone trying to do whatever they felt was more pertinent in the moment. Deaton clenched the rail, leaning as far forward as his tie line would let him. The Larkspur's presence, a stable shadow above the craft, was outright ignored by the watchers. They had bigger troubles than an empress's ransom in psyllium and a rogue doppel to capture. The cell Pelkaya's sensitives had tried to reclaim drifted through the air, pearly shimmers blending with the clouds like oil slicks. Whatever cohesion had existed within the cloud was lost to the storm and the tug-of-war game Pelkaya's people had played with the Watchers. Her crew continued on, trying to recapture what was left, but Deaton knew it to be a lost cause. Tibbs sidled up to Deaton's side, his tie line pulling the back of his coat.
Looks bad.
Don't think they'll make it back to Petrostat, or the Remnant, if they can even find the heading.
Don't think they'll need to.
Tibbs jerked his chin to the west, and Deaton squinted against the wind to see what he meant. Somewhere down there in the water was a darker splotch. Oblong and ragged, one of the smaller members of the Remnant Isles pockmarked the white-capped sea, the only refuge the Watchers had to hope for this far from the coast. That spit of land, where the weather would keep on being rough and food would be scarce, or the Larkspur. Deaton surveyed the deck for the lean, familiar frame of Pelkaya. He spotted her near the main mast, inspecting the damage. Koss was hooked in beside her, coiling a rope.
Ho, Captain!
She glanced up, saw him waving at her, and went right back to what she was doing. Ignoring the exhaustion in his legs, Deaton sauntered toward her, careful not to tangle his line, and stopped when he was close enough to lean his weight against the mast.
Pelly, our courageous leader. How about showing off a soft spot on that old heart of yours and bringing our new friends aboard? It's us or the water, I'm afraid. And I think they'd much rather be our prisoners than the sharks.
Leave them for the sharks. Maybe they'll get indigestion from my stolen psyllium.
Koss flinched, but kept his head down, fussing with a knot.
They're innocents.
They would have killed me for my birthright. That strike you as innocent?
Ripka would have killed you too.
She changed.
She had time to. Time you're not giving those boys in blue floundering below. You saved them. Maybe you might win some hearts. Or are you only out to spill blood in this war of yours?
I didn't start this war.
Just because you didn't start this war doesn't mean you can't change how it's fought.
Koss's head jerked up and he stared at Deaton like he was seeing him for the first time.
Captain, look!
Deaton hurried back to the rail. Pelkaya and Koss hurried after him, but he ignored them. He peered over the edge. The Watcher craft was badly damaged, slewing in a slow spiral toward the sea. They'd turned it around enough that it might make it to the black mass of an island, but steerage was clearly out of their hands now. One end dipped precariously, the other reached toward the clouds. Cell leaked from a crack in the sinking end of the ship, the crew of Pelkaya's Larkspur dutifully reining in what they could reach. The Watchers had tied in. He'd seen that truth for himself, and they were heading straight toward a small spit of land. Some would survive. Some would be in need of medical care, care the crew of the Larkspur could provide. Before Deaton could act, Tibbs turned tight on his heels and stalked to Pelkaya's side.
We're landing. We're gonna help those people.
Those Watchers?
Last time I checked, Watchers were people.
Captain!
No.
Captain, it has occurred to me that many of the solutions to your present predicaments may be found in coming to the aid of the Watchers below.
The solution to all my problems could be found in throwing you both off my ship.
Ah, well, while your proposed solution offers a certain ruthless charm, allow me to recommend a less messy path.
How dare you?
Hear 'em out. It has occurred to me that the Larkspur is in need of weapons and cellium. Both items are sure to be aboard the Watcher craft, though admittedly in lesser quantity now than when they set off upon their merry chase.
Do you suppose I have forgotten why the Larkspur is in need of those things?
I'm supposing the why doesn't matter. The need is there. You have a solution to a problem.
I suggest you take the Lord Honding's idea to heart.
Lord?
Man stations! We're going down to that hunk of island to rebalance our scales!
Koss, my quarters.
Pelkaya strode off, Koss trailing her heels.
Oh, some ally we've got in our corner. I'd have rather made friends with a weaver spider.
Knew what she was when we called for her.
Thought we did anyway. Too bad you didn't come with a convenient warning label, like our friend Commodore Throat Slitter.
How does Captain Ruthless sound?
Bah, it's too on the nose, old chum. I prefer something truly sinister, like Colonel Cuddles.
Awful.
See? Perfection.
Deaton threw an arm around Tibbs's shoulder and began to steer them back toward the captain's podium so that they could help with the ship's landing.
You gave an order I didn't issue.
I gave the order you should have given. That's my job as first mate, isn't it? Interpreting the best course of action when you are otherwise unable to do so.
I was right there. I was perfectly capable of making the call.
The right call?
Yes.
And that's where we disagree, Captain.
You disagree? You take it up with me in private. That was our deal.
Doing so now, ain't I?
You know clear as the skies are blue what I mean. You knew I wouldn't have made that call. Knew it would have made me look weak to override you after you'd called it out.
Maybe you need to look weaker.
What in the fiery pits is that supposed to mean? I've a ship to command, a war to win. I've no room for weakness, especially not in front of my thrice-cursed crew.
Is that what you're doing? Fighting a war?
Whose ship have you taken birth on, Koss? Where do you think you are? I've been fighting this war since I spilled Fod's blood in Aransa, and I won't stop until Thradia joins him in the dirt.
That's just the problem, isn't it?
Gods, for the love of a clear sky, explain what you're getting at. I'm too sandblasted, tired to wiggle my way through your nonsense.
Nonsense? Let me make the problem real clear for you, Captain. You're fighting a war. Where's your army?
My crew are...
Those aren't your soldiers. Your crew out there, those souls you order about like they should know the meaning of military discipline, they're not soldiers. They never have been soldiers. They're deviant sensitives, yes, and some of their abilities may lean toward a military persuasion, but they're civilians, Pell. Skies above, they're refugees. You're shoving refugees in the path of the monster that's oppressed them and demanding they scream your battle cry. Demanding they draw blood when half of them haven't slaughtered so much as a chicken before in their lives.
I seem to recall you saying they were ready for this. I seem to recall you telling me to give them more rope, more freedom to get involved.
I said they were ready to save their own people, ready to learn to carry arms in defense. I never said they were ready for this wholesale slaughter.
I never asked for this.
Neither did they. This is your crusade, and it could be theirs too. But you're pushing them too quickly, expecting them to take up blades of battle right after setting down their damned cheese knives. That's not a group of killers you have out there, and that's a good thing. But you're scaring the salt out of them with all this let the Watchers die talk. Shit, Bell. Some of them are people who just weeks before we picked them up would have happily gone to their local watch with any trouble in their lives. Petty thieving isn't murder. The two don't translate.
It's Deaton Haunding. He's pushed things forward too quickly. Didn't give me time to get them acclimated to the fight.
Haunding's a catalyst, I won't deny it. But he's only showing off the cracks that were already there. It's not his fault the crew's shying from your fight.
It's mine.
Yes. Come on, Captain. Let's get back on deck and show them how strong that heart of yours can be.
Lead the way.
I already did. The rest is up to you.